Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Well, here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Judd Dunning about what I'm going to call the Putin problem. Next, we'll talk with author Alex Kershaw about his book on four Medal of Honor recipients in World War II. Then, of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. Okay, it's a pleasure to introduce Judd Dunning. He's an author, a comedian, a politician, and I don't know what else. But he has a good sense of humor and he has a good understanding of the challenges facing our nation right now. Perhaps we can call our interview the Putin problem. Judd, will that work for you? Welcome to the show.
It's so great to be here, and God bless all your patriots, and thanks for all your service over these many years into AM radio, where freedom still lives. Absolutely, the Putin problem. It's interesting. That's exactly what Biden wanted, because we had a Biden problem.
Well, that's true. Start by giving us a bit of your background, then we'll get on the topic.
Yeah, you bet. So I'm a conservative fish out of water here. I came out to Los Angeles to do a soap opera back in the early 90s. I've been in real estate I was in 20 years out here. Then I've been in real estate for 20 years. About 6 or 7 years ago, we did stand up and movie making, everything, you know, it became indicative and imperative that we actually start talking about what's most important, which is the politics of the day, which has always been my lifelong passion. So I wrote a book, 13 and a half Reasons Why Not to Be a Liberal and How to Enlighten Others. It's picked up by Newsmax. So I'm a pundit there and an AM radio host and a Newsmax columnist. And it's a great pleasure to be here.
Well, okay, we got a lot in common. And you're in California, Los Angeles, right now, right?
49% of the time, according to the tax board. Not only is Comrade Fornia changing a lot, but it's getting a lot more violent, a lot more expensive. So, we're excited to do what Reagan said and vote with our feet. I think it's an important time. So we're splitting our time between here and Texas.
As I think you knew, I grew up in California, born and raised there, and I live in Michigan now. Like California, we have a goofy governor, but life is still a lot better. Okay.
Sad thing is, America is at a place now where you actually use this premise of voting with your feet, that you actually would move around. It's like there's this successivist, hum in the air, because people are actually unhappy enough that they're migrating to different locations, which is just bad leadership. Nobody was doing this during the Trump years.
Well, that's way too true. Okay. You said that Russia's invasion of Ukraine is a direct consequence of our current weakness, and that's part of the Putin problem. Give us some background on that.
I think everyone knows that a rationalist, not a radical, that politics are personal. I think there's a lot of been focused on the background of a lot of our leaders and how that translates. I mean, ultimately, you can't take the personal out of politics. So I think we know enough about Putin's past to say, to make that assertion. But the bottom line is, besides empire building, right, there are a lot of resources. There's a strong plutocratic presence. There's a definitely a contaminated deep state in Ukraine. So I love what Russell Brand said the other night. I was doing a disclaimer before we got on the air that it's not somebody I follow every day. But he's starting to turn. He's getting very red pilled to a certain degree. I still think he's a shill. I still think Elon Musk is a shill in certain degrees. But eventually, rationality turns the day. And a great point was: is Putin bad? Is his murderous regime and his autocratic regime and dictatorial regime in the past bad? Yes. Are there other factors in play? Yes. And the first one is a weak America. When we left World War I and World War II, if I tell any young person, if you want to understand the truth of American freedom, study war. And we have a brittle map. We've always had a brittle map with the pan-Islamic states. And then we've got China and Russia and Iran. They're always present. And North Korea. And all we need to do is to weaken to allow them to test the realm. No one wants to be second place. That's part of our American exceptionalism. We actually got to first place. And we held on to it through, fortunately, Judeo-Christian ethics. And we are the best leader to fill the vacuum. But literally, look how quickly it fills. I just want to say what was interesting was I was talking to Fred Kagan from AEI, a great international scholar, before Trump had come in and he said, it's going to take two decades of conservative internationalists to repair what Obama has done in his period of term. And then Trump did it in 6 months. So are things bad? Absolutely. Is there always hope? Absolutely.
You know, that's really, really well put. And the issue is, you can't solve a problem if you won't own it. And we don't seem to see that happening today. Russia is got all kinds of issues. You know, Putin migrated from being a very rational person to being an absolute dictator. And apparently he's losing his popularity in Russia. But that doesn't have anything to do with us. We should be seeking to be in power so that they can't threaten us. And I think even though we said we're going to stop doing it, we're still buying oil from them. I mean, this is crazy to me.
The positive side of this crisis, I think, was a post-colonial, neocolonialist period in the world has passed. Everyone's kind of, I think there's a general agreement, which is interesting, right? It's like, hey, you know what? The map is where the map is now. Make peace with what you own. That's an evolution in our global side. That's the positive side of globalism that I observe on this. I think that's great. It's great how the world has come together, right? Would they come together if it was us? Interesting enough, you know? But the good thing about America is people who know history and military history very, very well. We don't conquer. We don't pillage. We don't rape. We don't take any resources. In fact, we often stick around for 2, 3, 4, 5 decades and pay an exorbitant amount for even having to go into the issue of having to kill to promote freedom, right? So we're an amazing and noble country, although we're contaminated by the military-industrial complex. I think we've got corruption at the top, et cetera. But I think with what's going on with Russia's, so that's the positive side. That's the only positive side of globalism I'm seeing right now, right? This collective push toward climatism right now, shutting down oil and getting off of independent oil. You know what's interesting right now? While we're starving on oil here, right? While we're starving here on oil, the rest of the country knows that it's just not affordable yet. The rest of the world, most of the rest of the world knows it's not affordable yet. They're not getting off their independence off of oil. So it's the same thing we're doing with climate change. If China and India doesn't jump in, it's virtue signaling. It's just not in the cards. It's a great intention. So it's interesting what's going on in oil right now, what we're watching. We were talking before the show. Here's the blowback in the short term that may actually boomerang and really nip these guys in the tail. And that is that when you drive oil prices this high, you ramp up the oil industry, man. Shale people are like digging suddenly and people are starting to crow. There's still a lot. There's like 15% inflation in the shale and the natural gas extraction because of all the other problems. But a lot of these diggers in America, these people, they didn't want to contaminate the environment. They don't even need banks now. They just made so much money on inventory. They don't even have to use outside financing in the short amount of time that Biden's wrecked the economy. So there's this other thing going on at home as well. But the Putin problem, back to like a theme of the show, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I think, you know, Joe Biden, just a terrifying moment when he switched his brain off in Poland, saying that we need to remove Putin and that people are going to be sitting in front of the tank saying, I'm holding my ground, I'm standing here. I mean, the guy is so inept and so threatening. If there's ever been a moment for the 25th Amendment, but meanwhile, how do we address Putin? And I think the key is you nailed it so quickly. And that is that we need transparency. And what infrastructure since the Budapest Memorandum in 1994 have we put in that we could be unusually honest about as an American superpower? And let them know, oh, well, if there are biolabs or weapons or whatever we have there, could we de-escalate and negotiate peace through radical integrity? And that would be the American way. That would be the American way. But I don't know if those times are gone.
I fear that you're right. And there's a lot more to discuss about our nation's challenges. And Judd is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thought. Judd and I will be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
Attention all film club fans. The 20th annual Garden State Film Festival is available virtually March 28th through April 3rd. There's over 200 films from around the globe to see in all genres. Get your virtual multi-pass to see them all, or a 1, 5, or 10 pack. They are all available on demand March 28th to April 3rd. Visit gsff.org. That's gsff.org to learn more and to get your tickets today. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Judd Dunning as we discuss what we're calling the Putin problem. Judd, one of the things that is, I think, very much in our future is China taking over Taiwan. That's part of this issue too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Sorry, I didn't hear the question mark out there. I was sitting here thinking how fascinated I was with it, listening to a colonel. And you know, I have to digress. I was thinking a little bit too about my, hearing Michael Flynn on X-22 the other night and how your unique perspective from a military perspective, it seems like the military is breaking away from the narrative to protect themselves right now. Because if we get into a multi-front war, there was somebody here that was at our staying with me that was actually in the Department of Defense. And the good news is like they were actuarial tables. It's like the size of our military, we still are radically dominant. We definitely need to bolster up what's going on the seas. We definitely need to bolster up what's happening with hypersonic defense, right? But at the same time, we still have this significant advantage. But we're not in a good position for a multi-front war, right? So at this point, really, the thing that needs to be happening, if China starts to move in Taiwan, if we don't want to be weakened in a 1-2 punch, if you were Russia, strategically, unlike Joe Biden announcing there needs to be a regime change in front of Putin, which is such a different style than the Trump years, I would say Russia and China and North Korea would might even have talks on how to agitate us and make all their moves at the same time, right? It would be a brilliant strategy. Even Iran, like you could have all the access of evil. George Bush's only, well, not only, but one of his greater moments. He had a lot, he really became quite the progressive for me at the end in many ways. You know, they could hit us on a multi-front situation. So Taiwan, for me, isn't just about Taiwan. It's about, is America well defended beyond all the PC madness we're going through right now and the cultural Marxism that a deconstructed country is easier to control? Can we defend a second front? And that's what Taiwan is about. I mean, I think it's a pretty serious issue. What do you say, Colonel?
Well, I think that Taiwan is as good as gone. China is so strong right now militarily, and they have it all centered right around their country. We're comparatively downsized, and only a tiny portion of our military is in that area. I think this is almost a done deal. It's only a question of when they're going to do it, not if.
Absolutely.
And one other point that we've been sort of dancing around, for many, many decades, America was the world's cop. I don't think we need to do that anymore. Like we are to a degree with Ukraine, we're helping people defend themselves, but we're not sending our guys over there to die and get maimed in the process. I think that's a good formula. I don't think we're doing it as well in Ukraine as we could, but that's another issue. Okay.
I want to jump on that if I can. I just want to say,
do
it. It's a great point in Trump's last rally, right? Is how many wars did Trump get us into? None. We can be strong and moderately isolationist into a new era of more sophisticated statesmanship. But I think, one, we have to be very strong about it. And two, and then this was the whole thing, right? It's like, I'm in commercial real estate, institutional real estate. So we do some pretty large stuff. And, you know, the leaders of these great companies, the guys pushing 9 to 10 figures, they like to meet. They like to talk personally. They've gotten to where they are because of a certain sophistication. And they want to discuss matters. And I think that approach to statesmanship with our presidents caused the Mueller report, right? Caused the Ukrainian phone calls. Like the more that you, the leaders leaned in. You know, I have a thing that I do with higher end people is a lot of, I have a commercial brokerage. I have an investment firm as well. And, you know, a lot of people like to be in control and in the middle. And I think there's a golden point where you say, hey, you know what, let's put the principals on the phone. You know, let's talk, because there is a certain narcissism in leadership. And I think somebody like Putin, this is just my personal opinion, would rather feel that importance of one-to-one communication as, you know, a shared leadership of the world, right? Than be polarized against the force. And at that point would have to act. So I think Trump did an amazing job, and he got red flagged and abused by the left for their narrative when really some brilliant leadership. So, you know, we're all, I think the right, generally, I think what people get wrong is there were 16 Democratic war presidents and there were 10 Republican presidents. We're actually not the war party. They are.
Oh, yeah. If you go back in history, it's very, very clear that the Democrats are the war party. They get us there. This is Colonel Denny Gill on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Judd Dunning. So, Judd, it looks like we both agree that moving America away from being the world's cop, but that doesn't mean a leader. And I especially like your point of face-to-face communication. Yeah, it's good for their ego, but it's also a way to read people better by being there. Just being there, you have recognition as somebody who's important. I think that works everywhere, in business, in politics, in everything. Face-to-face is by far better. And who knows what it could do? It very likely won't make anything worse. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think that there's a high possibility that the Donbas areas might be negotiated back into Russia. I think that's going to really look bad for us. But the cost of taking on two global powers at this point in history is prohibitive. You know, I mean, we have stuff. We have enough to deal with at home. Like, you know, we need to get 2022 and 2024 on track. Make sure we have an uncontaminated voting system.
Yeah.
And get through this cycle. I mean, there's no reason. Here's going to be the big question that you and I are going to see. There's no reason that a country, we have this aberrant situation with Trump killing it, about to head into a second presidency, although contentious personality for some, not for me. And in 2022, it should be just a stomping. So we're going to find out. I think we're going to find out in like months if we have if our country has really gone to that level of corruption, and can we rotate power back? Because, you know, I was joking the other day. I said, I think the only real win that's going to come out of this year is that when we get to the Olympics, that our women's swimming team is probably going to kick the tail of the Russian women's swimming team.
You know, there's so much more we could talk about, all this climate change and systemic racism and voter suppression and stuff, but we don't have time. Maybe we'll have to do this again later. Given the stuff that we're in now, what can citizens do? What should citizens be doing or being ready to do to help make this change, in your opinion?
You know, very interesting. There's a guy named Scott Pressler, who was a young, bright Mensa character that I've been following for a while. And he hops on Twitter, I jump on, because he really understands the midterms. I think one thing we have to do is we have to get more educated. We've gotten more educated in news, I think, generally as a population, although they call it low information voting for the people that are Republican or conservative or pro-Trump. Now, that's the new, right? Low information voters, because they're rational conservatives. Hilarious. But Scott has been converting Democrats at the pump. There's a whole national thing going on right now. I think that's one of the most interesting and exciting situations we have going. I put my Miss Me Yet stickers up there. I've got an article coming out. I'm at juddunning.com. You go Newsmax Insiders, Judd Dunning, or you can get us there, I think, to the website, Judd Dunning. And, you know, I'm meditating on the greats, and something I learned a long time ago. You know, my uncle was Vice President Merrill Lynch for you know, 42 years, like, oh, you know, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. He's like, don't worry, man. He goes, no matter what these communists roll out, he goes, Americans always out earn the taxes, even when they're 65, just work harder. And that was kind of what the Trump situation was. So I think one, we've got to tighten our belts. We got to adjust to the real inflation's out there too. We have to work harder, work longer. I think pandemic for a lot of us who didn't go on PPP, EDD and THC, I think we all got stronger and richer because we knew how to work hard. There's nothing else to do. So I think we have to pull this nation forward with our core, which is 100 million people for sure. And then I think, you know, like Scott is doing, it's like those moments of conversion, have those discussions. We have to be unapologetic, as my radio show is called, unapologetic, and, you know, and be willing to lose a few friends right now, because you're probably not going to lose somebody for the long term when the left is eating themselves and doing so poorly. So I think they beat us up with cancel and consequence culture. But right now, speak up. You know, speak up, get out there and, you know, fight for what's right. Because on the right, what we do is we take the high road no matter what.
Yes, sir. Okay. Judd, quickly now, you're an author. You've got a few books out. Name a couple of them, please.
Yes, sir. 13 and a half Reasons Why Not to Be a Liberal and How to Enlighten Others is available on Amazon, on Newsmax. It's really where my joy is. You know, I drop my column there every other week and we're on AM 790 here in Los Angeles. And Twitter's the best place to follow me. Judd Dunning with three D's. That's J-U-D-D-D-U-N-N-I-N-G, Judd Dunning. And we'd love to hear from everybody.
That's awesome. Thank you, Judd. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. Thank you for caring as much about our country as you do and actually encouraging people to step forward. I appreciate you, and I'm glad we're friends.
God bless. You too. Thank you so much.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with author Alex Kershaw about his book, Against All Odds, the story of four soldiers receiving the Medal of Honor in World War II. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 26 with each arm twice. Then take a break but stay in the area. I'll be right back. My fellow patriots, in these troubling times, it is more important than ever for us to take care of our fellow Americans. That's what Patriot Food stands for. U.S.-only grown foods. When you make an online purchase, you are supporting a U.S. farmer and our great veterans every time. Don't mistake Patriot Foods for survival food. This is an American farmer brand. Visit patriotfoods.com and click Shop Now today. That's patriotfoods.com and click Shop Now today.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a pleasure to welcome author Alex Kershaw to the show. Alex is a New York Times bestselling author of a book on World War II. Born in England, he graduated from Oxford and has lived in the United States since 1994. I guess he has the best of or the worst of both countries. I don't know which way to put that. His latest book, Against All Odds, is about four U.S. soldiers who received the Medal of Honor for their heroism in World War II. I just finished reading the book. I thought I knew, and I learned so much of what I didn't know. It was a great book. So welcome, Alex. Glad you could join us.
That's great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Alex, tell us a bit about your background. How did you decide to become an author or a historian? I mean, that's not something that I think most people think about. Did you stumble into it, or how'd that happen?
Well, I was a journalist in my 20s, and then I started interviewing World War II veterans, and that led to writing my first book about World War II, The Bedford Boys, way back in like 2003 that came out. And I've just been really blessed to have just carried on doing the same thing. You know, I Battle of the Bulge, the Pacific. I've written, I think it's 10 books about World War II now, and I just kept on going. Wanted to interview veterans, basically. I mean, that was the main motivation, was to go and talk with people that had been in these incredible battles and moments in history. It just felt a lot more important and more satisfying than talking to a celebrity or whatever, you know. I've been very blessed, very lucky, you know. Sometimes I get really sad now because there's so few left alive. And, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life when they're all gone, but it's been a hell of a journey and I've been just really, really lucky.
Well, that's interesting. I have a funny feeling looking at the history of the world, there'll be enough wars to keep you busy going forward.
Yeah, well, there's one now and we all know where that is.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, that's beyond horrible, but okay. So your interest in World War II came from just, it was the right time when they were, veterans would start, were willing to start talking?
Well, you know, both my grandfathers fought in World War II. When one actually died of his wounds, he was in the British Navy, served on a really, really amazing boat, light cruiser, I should say, the HMS Ajax. And my mum never got to know her dad, and I never knew my grandfather. And to this day, you know, you get older and you start to look back on your life and you start to think about the influences that, and I think in some ways I always wanted to sort of honor him, and I didn't know him. And maybe in a way, writing about people like him was a way to try and honor, salve in some way that grief of my mom. And if you're British and you grew up in the 70s and 80s like I did, World War II was a huge deal. I mean, the only movies you could watch on a Sunday afternoon in England in the 1970s was, you know, The Battle of Britain or The Great Escape. There was, you know, it was only one movie that you could watch on one channel. And I just grew up obsessed with World War II. I read all the action comics. I won't go on too long, but I think the answer to your question would be very simple. One short story is that my mum watched me walk down the street and almost bang into a lamppost once because I had my head in an action comic. And it was called Commando, and it was about the British commandos on D-Day. And I was so engrossed, I almost walked into a lamppost. I was reading these things as I was walking along the street. So I guess it was like, when I was a kid, it was the most beautiful escape. You know, I mean that sincerely. I lived in a world of World War II and drama and heroes, and I loved it. And I, you know, the fact that I'm still able to write about these people, and I guess it was preordained from when I was 8 years old that I'd end up being a skint writer, a broke writer living in the US, writing about American heroes that were the real deal, you know?
You know, that makes sense. It's a good thing you weren't born since 2000 because you'd walk into the post, but you'd be playing with your phone and you wouldn't know anything about World War II.
I'd be playing Medal of Honor on Nintendo, you know, whatever it is.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with author Alex Kershaw about his book on World War II, Against All Odds. Alex, you picked four really amazing people, some of whom I had knew about and one of which I didn't know anything about. And I'm curious how you picked them, though they all seemed to serve together, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I was looking at was the 3rd Division because, you know, the 3rd Division lost most men in Europe of any American division, and they received the most medals of honor. I think it's 36 during the war and 4 were awarded subsequently. So I was like, yeah, this is a lot more than any other division. You know, 101st Airborne received 2 medals of honor. Weren't in combat for anywhere near as long, but still a hell of an achievement. And so I thought, well, among the 36 guys, you know, where are the connections between them? Did any of these guys serve in the same unit? Did they come across each other? Was somebody in the same battle? And, you know, I chose the guys because of the way they interacted with each other, either before they really got into combat or after the war. I wanted their lives to intersect in important ways. So even though one of them, Maurice Britt, was in a different regiment to the 15th Infantry Regiment, 3 of my guys are in the same regiment. So I was set there. But even though Maurice Britt wasn't in the same regiment, he knew Audie Murphy after the war. They communicated and he knew he was in a lot of the same battles. And he was the guy that kind of set the standard, if you like, because he was the one that racked up all 4 medals, Bronze Star, Silver Star, DSC, Medal of Honor. He wasn't the guy to beat, from the other point of view of the other guys. But as far as the press were concerned, certainly by the time you got into the spring of 1945, Frontline, the newspaper for the 3rd Division, was treating it like a football game. You know, like it was like a competition. They had a couple of headlines that I came across where, you know, Murphy had racked up so many medals that the only medal that Murphy didn't have by early spring of 1945 was a Medal of Honor. And Frontline newspaper had a headline, you know, Murphy equals Brit. And then when Murphy received the Legion of Legion of Merit, he beat Britt. So it wasn't a sports competition to these guys by any means. It was quite the opposite. But in a way, that was kind of an interesting aspect of the story, that there was that these stars, these guys that had received so many decorations, that they were being used by the media to create these stories about, well, you know, how many medals can they possibly win, you know?
Well, you were a media guy, so you know that.
Yeah, well, anything for a good story. But, you know, there was a serious point behind it, because, you know, anything that you could do to encourage and motivate men at any point, but especially by the time you got towards the end of the war, where industrial slaughter becomes so protracted and so deadly that, you know, January 1945, 20,000 Americans killed in the European theater. That's the largest number of the war. And that's the European theater, let alone the bloodbaths that are happening in the Pacific, Okinawa, Iwo Jima. We were very low on troops. We were really, really low. The biggest problems we had towards the end of the war was manpower. You know, the reason why the Battle of the Bulge became such a big mess was because we couldn't man that long front. We just didn't have the guys. You know, we were running low on guys. And so you got replacements, young kids coming in to fill the lines, huge casualty figures, a lot of morale issues. And everybody just wants to go home. They're like, I thought this war was going to be over by Christmas. You told it was going to be over by Christmas. We're still dying and it's freezing cold and we're not in Germany yet. So any medal that you could give, any kind of encouragement, any kind of propaganda was important. And in fact, the top brass were worried that we didn't give enough medals out. You know, we should have been given more medals, because medals mattered. It wasn't just a little bit of metal on your uniform. It meant something. It meant something to the guys that received it. It encouraged the guys that they fought with. You know, if you had a unit where a guy received the Medal of Honor, that was a big deal. That made them feel really proud, because it wasn't just Murphy that was being recognized. It was the 15th Infantry Regiment. It was the company that he was in. It was B Company. And you needed to do anything you could, especially if you were aware of the plummeting morale sometimes and the conditions and the attrition rate. You needed to do anything you could to get these guys to get out of foxholes and finish the job.
Amen, brother. Alec, we're about out of time. How can listeners buy a copy of Against All Odds? I presume Amazon and other
Amazon and Barnes & Noble and bookstores. You could, you know, go on Amazon and buy it right now if you can.
Hey, and troops, I loved it. It's a great book. Alex, thank you. Thank you
My
for
pleasure.
Taking time to join us today.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing the lives of these four great Americans. I appreciate you. I hope we can stay in touch.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much. It's been a great honor.
Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at ptsdlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. He reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. 58 this time. I want your ranger ready, then stand at ease. If you are suffering from anxiety, joint muscle aches, or trouble sleeping, try Day 3 Creation, a Christian family-owned provider of American-made, non-intoxicating, non-addictive CBD products created from natural, organic, laboratory-tested ingredients. Day 3 comes from a servant's heart as God calls us to care for each other with compassion and honesty. 10% of all profits go to Patriot Paws, providing disabled vets with service dogs. Visit day3creation.com to learn more. God bless. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Army vet Carl is absolutely amazed at how comparatively small Ukraine is holding out against huge Russia. He hopes we're doing all we can to support them.
Carl, the Russians seem to be short on leadership, supplies, and morale. Like you, I totally support the Ukrainians. I like the fact that we're helping.
And Sam is an Army dad and a farmer. He appreciated the interview on farming. He remembers during and after World War II when we basically fed the world. We sure can't now.
Right you are, Sam. We need to check labels and buy American food now and always. And now it's time for military history. What's the first one, Skip?
On April 5th, 1614, American Indian Princess Pocahontas, who died in 1617, married English Jamestown colonist John Rolfe in Virginia. Their marriage brought a temporary peace between the English settlers and the Algonquins. In 1616, the couple sailed to England. The Indian princess was popular with the English gentry.
Well, that's one way to stop a fight, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
On 7 April 1776, during our Revolutionary War, Navy Captain John Barry, commander of the American warship Lexington, made the first American naval capture of a British vessel when he took command of the British warship HMS Edward off the coast of Virginia. The capture of the Edward and its cargo turned Captain Barry into a national hero and boosted the morale of the Continental Forces.
And on April 6, 1917, 2 days after the Senate voted 82-6 to declare war against Germany, the House endorsed the declaration by a vote of 373-50, and America formally entered World War I. When World War I erupted in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson pledged neutrality for the U.S., a position that the vast majority of Americans favored. Britain, however, was one of America's closest trading partners, and tensions soon arose between the U.S. and Germany over the latter's attempted quarantine of the British Isles. Several U.S. ships traveling to Britain were damaged or sunk by German mines, and in February 1915, Germany announced unrestricted warfare against all ships, neutral or otherwise, that entered the war zone around Britain. 1 month later, Germany announced that a German cruiser had sunk the William Fry, a private American vessel. President Wilson was outraged, but the German government apologized and called the attack an unfortunate mistake.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't part of that mistake. On 8 April 1944, during World War II, Russian forces led by Marshal Fedor Tobokhin attacked the German army in an attempt to win back Crimea in the southern Ukraine, which was occupied by the Axis power. The attack would result in the breaking of the German defensive lines in just 4 days, eventually sending the Germans retreating. Crimea was the territorial plaything of many great powers, from the Ottoman Turks to the Russia of Ivan III. It had declared independence in 1918, but was occupied again by Germany in 1941. It was liberated by the Russians, only to find itself trapped within this greater Soviet Union. It once again declared itself an independent republic in the 1990s, and apparently the Russians won it back.
On April 4th, 1949, the U.S. and 11 other nations established the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, a mutual defense pact aimed at containing possible Soviet aggression against Western Europe. NATO stood as the main U.S.-led military alliance against the Soviet Union throughout the Cold War. Relations between the U.S. and the Soviet Union began to deteriorate rapidly in 1948. There were heated disagreements over the post-war status of Germany, with the Americans insisting on German recovery and eventual rearmament, and the Soviets steadfastly opposing such actions. In June 1948, the Soviets blocked all ground travel to the American occupation zone in West Berlin, and only a massive U.S. airlift of food and other necessities sustained the population of the zone until the Soviets relented and lifted the blockade in May 1949. In January 1949, President Harry Truman warned in his State of the Union address that the forces of democracy and communism were locked in a dangerous struggle, and he called for a defensive alliance of nations in the North Atlantic. NATO was the result. In April 1949, representatives from Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Great Britain, Iceland, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Norway, and Portugal joined the U.S. in signing the NATO agreement. The signatories agreed, quote, an armed attack against one or more of them shall be considered an attack against them all. President Truman welcomed the organization as a shield against aggression. The Soviet Union condemned NATO as a warmongering alliance and responded by setting up the Warsaw Pact, a military alliance between the Soviet Union and its Eastern Europe satellites in 1955.
And on 5 April 1986, a Berlin nightclub was bombed and 2 U.S. soldiers and a woman were killed and 230 injured. Palestinian Yasser Savati was suspected of playing a lead role in the bombing of the LaBelle discotheque. In 1996, he was extradited from Lebanon to face charges in Germany. In 1996, Andrea Hassler was arrested in Greece and extradited to Germany. Also, a woman named Irina Chana was suspected of planting the bomb, and her former husband were arrested in Berlin. In 1997, Mustafa Eder was arrested by the Italian police in Rome in connection with the bombing. All were sentenced to prison. Libby was implicated and in 2004 agreed to pay $35 million in compensation.
Colonel, I didn't get any of that, did you?
No, but maybe we should file a claim.
We should. On April 6, 1991, Iraq reluctantly agreed to accept UN conditions for ending the Persian Gulf War. However, they broke the rules at will with no consequences.
No surprise. And on 6 April 1995, a seminar of international biological weapons experts concluded that Iraq had an undeclared full-scale biological weapons program.
And on 5 April 2003, on the 18th day of Operation Iraqi Freedom, U.S. 3rd Infantry troops entered Baghdad for the first time. Coalition troops took several objectives surrounding the capital in the north and northwest. U.S. warplanes hit Iraqi positions near the commercial center of Mosul. Up to 3,000 Iraqi fighters were killed as American armored vehicles moved into Baghdad.
And that's military history for today. Well, now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
This is really crazy, Skip. A woman was shopping in a Miami Walmart when a 28-year-old Brendan Jamal Harvey approached her from behind, pulled up her dress, and began grabbing her. When the woman turned around, Harvey pushed her to the ground and ripped off her undergarments while grabbing her thighs and private places in the middle of the aisle. The victim screamed for help, and nearby shoppers acted quickly, removing Harvey from the victim and subduing him till police arrived on the scene and arrested him. Police charged Harvey with attempted sexual battery, and he's being held on $50,000 bond. Miami-Dade Police Detective Alvaro Zabadita told WTJV that investigators believe that Sunday's incident is not the first time Harvey attacked a woman, given the brazen nature of the attack. Brazen it was.
Thanks, Colonel. Throughout America, we are reading more and more stories like this, where women and the elderly are brazenly attacked in public places. And I have to ask myself this question. Why did this man think he could get away with this crime? And the answer is simple. Because most of the time, criminals do get away with crime. Police can't be everywhere at once, and neither do we want them to be always present, lest we end up with a police state. Because of that, if we want to live in a safe society, then ordinary citizens like you and I have to stand up and stop evil in its tracks. Serial rapists, by definition, don't stop with one victim. And with every successful attack, they gain confidence and skill, and their attacks become more and more bold. I always tell my concealed carry students this: let's make a social contract together. If you help protect the people I love, then I'll help protect the ones you love. And that's the way it has to be in a civilized society, or we end up with violence, mayhem, and danger as a part of our everyday lives. But more and more in my classes, I run across students who refuse to help other people being attacked. Their rationale goes something like this: I don't know that person, and I'm not responsible for them. Or, I'm not a police officer, so it's not my job. And while you can argue a case for all those responses, that doesn't change the logical outcome of a society that runs on the principle of never get involved in other people's problems. In this case, what would have happened if no one had come to this woman's rescue? A woman would have been brutally raped publicly in front of other women and children. That leaves a scar that may never heal. But since other men intervened, now the women present have the feeling that they're not objects to be attacked and used by men. In fact, I believe the opposite is true. All women are worthy of protection and honor, not just by men, but by everyone, regardless of gender. So women, you need to help out too. America needs many more protectors and defenders in the days to come. Crime is on the rise, and we're all in this together. So let's gird up our loins, get trained, and get armed so we can take on the growing threat of violent crime. Front Lines of Freedom salutes these two men who subdued the rapist until police arrived. Stay safe and keep up the good work.
I'm surprised they just didn't get out their phones and video it.
Colonel, I've seen that happen before too, and it's getting bad. We need more protector defenders.
We do. The movie of the month is The Paperboy. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, Sean Sorby from Veterans for Smart Power will discuss smart things we can do. Then we'll discuss Israel with Israeli Major Elliot Chodoff, and Valerie Leffler will discuss Phoenix. They give rides to vets who need rides. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.